The greatest grief a person can endure is often said to be the death of a child. Suki Forbes suffered that loss a decade ago when her 6-year-old daughter Charlotte died following a sudden high fever related to a rare genetic disorder. As part of her grieving, Forbes took an unusual approach. She met with a woman who claimed to be able to connect friends and family members to people who have died. Forbes writes about that experience in her new memoir, The Angel in My Pocket, a story of love, loss, and life after death. She also describes in it her difficult effort to find the will to live on.
The choices seemed basic and slim. Die, exist, live. I wanted to die, but with 2 young children to care for and a husband, that wasn't an option. Exist. I could do that, but how flat and lifeless. How dreary and endless the long march would be until I met Charlotte again. The only option that resonated with me was to live. But how?
That's Suki Forbes reading from her new memoir. She'll be at the Harvard Bookstore tomorrow night to talk about her book. And when she joined me earlier today in the studio, she described being in the hospital immediately after her daughter had died.
Those moments shortly after, I was mostly conscious of being outside of my body and not in. I could actually hear my heart beating and felt as though almost I was looking down on the scene and removed from it as an observing bystander rather than as a participant. And that state of shock is a place I stayed for quite some time. And in the book, I go to great lengths to describe how that both helped and challenged my ability to move into grief.
This was a sudden and shocking death. It wasn't like this child had a long-time illness that let you prepare for a possible death. It was a healthy child one day, and then your child was gone.
Exactly.
And you describe in the book, you describe yourself as a wasp. You're actually very funny in your book. You have this long family history of Salt and Stalls and Emerson's,
yes,
and Forbes. But you say that that kind of background of family stoicism interfered with your ability to grieve.
Well, I would say it both helped and hindered. Initially, it was helpful in that part of the puritanical and Emersonian self-reliant way is to march boldly forward and pull yourself up by your bootstraps and stiff upper lip and all of those wonderful expressions. So that initially allowed me to get out of bed and do what I had to do to be there for my children, my surviving children. But over time, and rather quickly, it really hindered my ability to descend into the grief. And I struggled with that for quite a few months before I was able to get in touch with any raw gutting pain.
What couldn't you do in terms of grieving that you felt like you should be able to do?
I felt as though I should be crawling around on the grass, screaming. Just anything short of utter lunacy seemed to be a horribly weak reaction to grief.
And meanwhile, your husband was grieving much more traditionally. He seemed very comfortable expressing his pain and anger, and that seemed to make you feel worse.
Yeah, I was both envious and intimidated by his reaction initially. He immediately went right off the cliff emotionally. And I say that utterly without judgment, because that to me seemed an appropriate place to go. And yet I was terrified that if I went off that cliff, I would never get out. And in a partnership, there's a lot of taking turns. And I saw him take that step off the cliff. And I don't know how one would allocate it, but it was equal parts my upbringing and equal parts maternal instinct. But it was very, very clear to me that I had to hold it together for a while. And part of me wanted to, and that was an easy excuse to not come unglued. And part of me really loathed the fact that I did not go there.
And then you began a flurry of all sorts of attempts to try to deal with your grief. Can you reel through some of the many things you did?
The obvious first step was, because the Catholic Church was such an important part of my husband's family, we went to church quite religiously each Sunday. And that, to me, was uncomfortable, but we did it. And I thought it was important for Michael and for the children to at least start there.
Your husband?
My husband, yes. I did a lot of writing. We did decide that we needed more life in the house, and we adopted not one, but two Jack Russell Terriers. We got chickens. I lost myself in books. Once I came up with many questions, I then dove in trying to find answers. And one of the obvious places was Elizabeth Kubler-Ross.
Kubler-Ross, of course, wrote the famous The Stages of Grieving.
Yes. And her On Death and Dying was quite popular, and that work really resonated with me.
After trying many of these more traditional methods of dealing with your grief, you tried something that even you acknowledge was very unconventional and very out of the ordinary, something even you were skeptical about initially.
Part of being laid flat by grief or any other major life challenge is looking outside of yourself. And when you are in that low place, one becomes much more open-minded much more quickly. And the idea that a medium would have extra data points that might give more information about my child became quite intriguing to me. And I thought, I've got nothing to lose and an awful lot to gain. And I read a book by a very well-known medium and found it intriguing enough to then attend a seminar that she did. And in that seminar, I was singled out of a crowd of about 500, and my daughter, Charlotte, came through in ways that were so compelling and very hard to discount.
You felt like this medium, this clairvoyant, was describing your daughter, even though this person didn't know you or your situation.
Correct. And she had said in her preamble, I will take messages from those on the other side, and I will start to talk, and I never know who will come through. But if who I'm describing starts to sound like one of your loved ones, put your hand up. And I thought, I am not putting my hand up. This is complete quackery. But the level of detail when she began to describe my daughter, a six-year-old girl, blonde hair, freckles across the bridge of her nose, died of a high fever, middle child, new to the area, on and on, very, very hard to imagine that somebody else in the room fit that description. I put my hand up, and she proceeded to share with me not only information that I did not know, but information that only I knew or only I had shared with Charlotte.
And I want to emphasize here that in your book, you say you went in really not expecting to believe this. You wanted to pay cash, so there was no credit card trace that you had gone. You believed there were people planted in the audience to make it seem real. But you really walked away believing that you had been put in touch with your daughter somehow.
Absolutely. In fact, I was shaking so violently when I walked out of the auditorium. I had to sit in my car for at least an hour before I drove. And I did. I walked into that auditorium hoping, of course, that something might happen, but in large part quite skeptical.
That group session was powerful enough for you that you decided to have a private session with this medium, this clairvoyant. Mm-hmm. And you had just one session, but you describe it as kind of life-altering and perspective-altering. Mm-hmm. What happened that changed the way you looked at life?
Well, my daughter came through again. And this was a one-hour session, so there were just more information exchanged.
When you say your daughter came through, what do you mean exactly?
Well, it sounds almost laughable, but the woman who, the medium, would sit and her eyes would almost glaze over, although she felt very present, and then she would just start talking. And it was rather rapid fire, and it felt very much as though somebody were standing behind her or whispering in her ear to give her this information.
What kind of information were you getting from this medium, this clairvoyant, that made you feel like you were in touch with your daughter?
When I put the children to bed, I used to say to them every night, if you are lonely and you miss me, put your hand over your heart, and I'm there. And in this session, the medium said to me, she wants to say something to you. She wants you to know that she's doing very well. And she wants you to know that if you miss her, you should put your hand over your heart, because she's in there. And she also described at great length our home, our street, some wonderful our entire neighborhood had pulled together and put a big pink star up in one of the trees in the neighborhood. And the medium brought that up and said, Charlotte wants to acknowledge something beautiful and electric in a tree that the community did for her. She thinks it's very special. These were so detailed, it was very hard to just discount as somebody reading minds or throwing out platitudes to a clearly grieving mother. These were very, very specific.
I'm sure that there are readers of your book and listeners to this show who, despite how much you believed this, will find it hard to believe that they can accept that it happened. On the other hand, you make the point in your book that who's to say how you properly grieve something so horrendous? And who's to say that if a person didn't lose a child themselves, what they might not find themselves wanting to do to get over that loss? So I think that when an exceptional loss happens, people turn to unexpected means sometimes to grieve.
That's right. And I don't by any measure mean to imply that this is the path. Clearly, seeing a medium won't resonate for some people. Although that said, I can't tell you how many people have come and shared private stories with me about their own experiences. But the point is looking outside of oneself for answers. So someone else may find comfort in getting involved in the PTA or in their church. It's not what you do. It's the process of looking and seeking outside of yourself for answers. And those places of comfort may ultimately be a surprise, but being open to them is a very important part of the process.
It seems from your book that one of the reassurances you took away from your experience with this medium was the belief that your daughter wasn't fully gone. Mm-hmm. She was still there with your family somehow. Can you describe some of the ways that you learned things from this medium that you feel helped you make peace to some degree with your child's death?
I have come to believe that life and death are just points on a continuum, so that when we die, we are separate and yet still here. So there is some essence of Charlotte. There is some essence of our loved ones that still remains. And if we are open to it, they are there. And they are not there in the same form. My relationship with my 6-year-old daughter is not the same. It is much more a relationship of an angel or a spiritual being or a more enlightened being. But I very much feel that she's there. When I pray now, although I do believe in God, I mostly have quiet conversations of gratitude or help to my daughter.
You also wrote that there's a red-tailed hawk, or maybe different hawks, but that seem to show up at family events, and your family wants to believe or has come to believe that that's Charlotte.
Yes.
So she's there in a way that seems like more than just a memory for you.
Powerful messages, I think, are available to all of us if we are open to them, and we can all attach different meaning to them. A red-tailed hawk arrived the afternoon that Charlotte died on our fence post in front of our house and stayed for several days as people came and went. And from that point onwards, at every family gathering, we have a red-tailed hawk. And my son had shared with me in a quiet moment, and he's now 17 and races very fast and at a very high professional, almost professional level go-karts, and he said he feels every race all over the United States, he looks up before a race and he sees a red-tailed hawk circling the sky. And he also feels his sister rides around the track with her arms around his neck, which is such a lovely image for me to think of.
One of the things that you say this medium also helped you do was to be able to create some kind of future without your daughter.
Mm-hmm.
What do you feel like that future is?
Well, much of the book for me was about what you do when you decide to live and finding the gifts in grief and being resilient. And I wanted to know that life could be better, and that I could, if I chose to ultimately feel that I could heal and come back a better human being, a better parent, a better partner, a better friend, and have a deepening of heart and empathy and mind as a result of that horrible suffering. And I do think that those gifts are available to all of us if we allow ourselves to do the work to move through all of that horrible, gutting sludge that's involved in loss. We all can come out on the other side actually better human beings than when we went in. And I feel I have to qualify that by saying I'd give it all back in a second to have my daughter. But since that is not to be, I feel I am a much better human being after having experienced this. And I don't think that is unique to me. I think that is one of the gifts we all can receive through this process.
Suki Forbes is the author of the memoir, The Angel in My Pocket, a story of love, loss, and life after death. She'll be at the Harvard Bookstore tomorrow night at 7. Suki, thank you for coming to the studio.
Thank you for having me.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer, and join us again for more Radio Boston tomorrow when we'll be doing a special show from Cape Cod. We'll be broadcasting from the Hot Chocolate Sparrow in Orleans. Come there and join us.